Hello, everybody, and we're continuing with program number 41 in Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle. Today is, so far anyway, for this relatively short program, the 5th of December, and we're on page 101. As a little segue, DK has been talking about the idea of trial and error, and how we are not to have undue distress because of our wrong interpretations and astral psychism. No need at this stage for undue distress, I suppose. May I suggest that if it continues, there would be a reason for it. But then, of course, the distress would be due. But basically, he tells us that all that is needed is experience, and that the experience gained through experiment and its expression in daily life. Remember that knowledge is justified in relation to the sign Leo. Yeah, there's an incentive towards knowledge in Taurus, but the justification of it through experience is coming through Leo. So there will be experiment, and there will be expression in daily life, and there will be the justification of knowledge, and we should not find ourselves excessively distressed at the early stage, because eventually experience will take over. He's telling us that the system of trial and error will assist in the life of the accepted disciple, and not just the beginner. DK tells us that when the disciple is an accepted disciple and not simply an accepting disciple, and not simply in the early stages of discipleship, of course he may have taken the first initiation, the errors decrease in number. That seems, I think, very important. Obviously, the more experienced accepted disciple is no longer committing the kinds of errors that we find in the earlier stages. But it's not necessarily a great relief, because trials and the use of many and varying energies become more extensive, and therefore cover a much wider range of activity. So, if anything, it's more complex to be an accepted disciple than merely an accepting disciple. I think there's kind of a transition period between simply being an aspirant, then being an accepting disciple, and then on your way following the processes of normal discipleship until you become the accepted disciple, and Master DK or some other master is actually supervising your process, gathering you magnetically around the periphery of his ashram, and altogether making your discipleship life one of greater certainty. Now this takes us to, that was the end of Commentary 40, and it was done rather late at night, I guess. And we're starting with 41, and today being the 5th of December. Well, we're getting ready here for a big celebration, because tomorrow is the Finnish Independence Day. Every 17th, no, every 6th, looks like, every 6th of December, we're going to be celebrating that. So now we go on with Master DK to what is called the processes of registration. Now, we've been dealing with registration for quite a while, and if I was to, you know, just try to go way up here and say, what is this registration? Let's see if I could do that. Maybe we could find something that would be indicate what it really is. So let's see, this is a save as, and well, don't tell me I'm going to get kind of hung up here. Let's see. Well, we might say here, looking right at 3 points and going way back, that there he's mentioning this whole process of registration quite a bit. There are 3 points which are concerned with sensitivity to impression. Okay, that's one. With construction of the resultant reservoir of thought, and with responsiveness to invocative appeals. I just want to make those a little bigger, because I think it would help us get the proper proportion. Okay. Just a couple of little augmentations. Okay. And what are these three? What are these 3 points? And we seem to be still continuing with them. And they are processes of registration, processes of recording interpretations, which involve then the use of ever more finely constructed thought, and processes of resultant invocative response. So we are invoked and we invoke. We are evoked and we evoke as well. So that's one place, relatively recently, where he mentions the processes of registration. Okay. Now, again, here on page, looks like about page 100 or so, he mentions again processes of registration, of recording interpretations, and resultant invocative response. Sometimes when we're using the great invocations, we think that everything we have to do is all about invocation and evocation. Well, that's only partially the case. Okay, let's see. And here we are again at page 101. And no doubt it will be continued because the rest of the book is coming here under, it continues, you see. We start at 101. So the processes of registration are founded upon what I might call invocative approaches from a wide area of possible contacts. Well, the further we go, the wider our possibility of being impressed by or picking up possible contacts which were not available to us before that time. So a very wide area of possible contacts. Right now, we haven't any idea or very little idea about what that wide area might actually be. That will grow in its clarity as we continue on the path of accepted discipleship and finally, shall we say, probationary initiation, and finally on the path of true initiation following the third degree, or beginning, maybe, let us say, with the third degree. So going on with the Tibetan, the disciple, what I wanted to point out, you see, is basically how much attention he pays to this idea of registration. I think to a great extent we're quite numb when it comes to processes of registration. We don't detect very much. But as we go on our evolutionary spiritual path, we pick up more and more of the wide, from a wide range of processes of registration. Now, going on with the Tibetan, the disciple has to learn to distinguish between these many impacts upon his sensitive aura or area. He has kind of used both of those words together, aura and area. So, and we can see, may I interpolate, that the process of discrimination or distinction or distinguishing is very important. We can get hit from all sides by that which we begin to register. But what are these vibrations? From what level of tension do they arise? And how often do we simply subside back into what is quite normal for us, which is not especially sensitive at all? Okay, so going on with the Tibetan. This is just an important statement that I have here in kind of a quasi purple. And you kind of question yourself, how sensitive are you to the impacts, the registrations upon your often insensitive aura, or your increasingly sensitive aura? And maybe the report wouldn't be quite so good if we're honest with ourselves, which we always have to be when studying these deep and very subtle and even subjective matters. Remember, of course, the difference between subtlety and subjectivity. A subtlety can be of the subtle bodies within the personality. Subjectivity is another matter. And that begins with the soul, ascends to the spiritual triad, and eventually even ascends to the monadic realm, to which the Christ ascended after his crucifixion. Well, it wasn't his crucifixion, but he did use the body of the initiate Jesus. He ascended, disappearing into a cloud, as his disciples described it. They didn't have the esoteric means of describing this disappearance into what we might call a deep subjectivity. And there are states beyond that first stage of ascended subjectivity. Let's call it liberated subjectivity onto the logoic plane, where at least symbolically and, well, vibrationally, and in terms of your membership of the council within Shambhala, you sit at the right hand of the Father. Okay, going on with the Tibetan. In the early stages, the majority, may I interpolate, of these many impacts, the majority of them are unconsciously registered, though the registration is acute and accurate. So that is how it is in the beginning. Interesting, isn't it, that DK says that, well, we don't know that the impacts are really coming in, that the registrations are really coming in, and they are, after all, acute, and that means sharp and accurate. Remember what the third ray is sometimes called, the acute energy of divine mental perception. That's one of the ways that word acute is used. The registration here is acute and accurate. And the majority unconsciously registered. Well, what does this tell us? In what kind of ocean of energies are we really living? Things are happening, but we're not aware that those things are happening. Now, the goal is quite different. The goal, says the Tibetan, nevertheless, is conscious registration. Conscious registration, which means that you have moved up the scale of sensitivity quite a bit through your patience, shall we say, your watchfulness, your attentiveness. More and more, these registrations become conscious. And what does he say? How is this brought about? He says, this is brought about through the constant, another one of those golden phrases. This is brought about through the constant and steady holding of the attitude of the observer. Sometimes when we are doing our evening review, we may wonder why we're doing it. But in fact, it gives way to a different state of identification regarding the nature of our true identity. The constant and steady holding of the attitude of the observer. Further, this conscious registration, let me make that quite big. Further, the Tibetan goes on, it is developed through the attainment of detachment. The detachment of the observer from all desires and longings which concern the separated self, not necessarily which concern the welfare of humanity, from those types of longings and desires, we are not necessarily detached. So here we go. It's developed from the detachment, the attainment of detachment of the observer from all longings, all desires and longings which concern the separated self. Now, when you're studying in the Arcane School, you learn right away in this kind of esoteric development that we ask nothing for the separated self. Now, that is a difficult demand. There's not so many people that achieve that, and even groups don't achieve it. And certainly these days, nations do not achieve this. They still ask and demand for the separated self. Now, for what self is it legitimate to ask, and it is for the inclusive self that it is legitimate to ask for the elevation of the inclusive self, the fulfillment of the high desires and longings of the greater self. That's okay, and that is desirable. So detachment is the key. Now, remember Alice Bailey? She had three letters attached to her name, DRS. Those names or those acronyms, those little combinations by which the disciples were identified, were qualities that they had to express, and often which they were not yet expressing. So for her, it was, first of all, the italicized quality was detachment. Then came R, which was rest. Few people could do what Alice Bailey did. You know, she was Gemini, and she just pushed on. She got very little sleep, and, you know, probably made her health somewhat precarious. And S, skill in action. She certainly needed that because of the extremely responsible position in which she found herself. Few people, I think, have found themselves with so much responsibility on their shoulders. But she had decided, with her first-ray personality and first-ray mind, that this was going to be a life in which she would expiate a great deal of the karma that still hung over her. And one gets the feeling that part of that karma was the karma of suicide or spilling her own blood in a previous incarnation, which led to a kind of leukemia, condition of the health, and the need for very frequent blood transfusions. Were they every day? Were they every other day? And it was interesting that one of her close cooperators, very close to her, was one of the persons, a woman who gave Alice Bailey a lot of blood. So you kind of wonder about what the relationship was then. DK said, well, look, we can solve this for you and make life a little easier. But she was so tough and so determined that she went ahead with the difficulty just as it was, and did not want to be relieved from the karma so that she didn't have to carry it from life to life to life, which is often the case if, you know, you're not going to deal with it in the life that it occurs. It's a bit like Master Moria saying, well, the messenger is at the door, but the disciple runs off into the woods, you know, and refuses to take what the messenger has to offer. Well, hopefully, as we become accepted disciples, we will no longer make such foolish errors. In the beginning, I think there's not too much that can be done about the poor choices that we do make. We've all made them. We've all had our opportunity to choose correctly and have chosen incorrectly, and then we learn, and learning the hard way. That seems to be something, may I interject, that humanity does very well, that is, learning the hard way instead of the way of intelligent anticipation. But that's how it goes for all of us until we straighten out. So, you know, he's still dealing here with these processes of registration. Now, you know, I'm not going to make this a long program because Tuya and I have the second Advent program coming up in just an hour and 40 minutes. So, you know, maybe if I bring this program in at about an hour and hope that I can do more later, that will be about what I can do. Okay, so Master DK goes on to say, now, I hope, by the way, that you are getting the distinction through the verbal cues that I give. Of course, you know, it would be obvious anyway, of what Master DK has said in his text and that to which I am referring when I cross-reference his text to other aspects of text in other books. That will, for us, make one ever more complete sphere of knowledge out of all that he has said. That's what it will do. So DK goes on. We're talking about the attitude of the observer. Now, the greatest observer in the entire universe, or any universe, is the universal logos. And we ascend more and more into that position of original observation, where we identified as and knew that we were the universal logos, which is an essentially infinite being, but finite in its demonstration during any particular universe. So DK goes on and says, it will therefore be obvious to you that the use of the word observer involves the concept of duality and therefore of separation. In this case, however, the motive prompting observation is not self-interest. It's not the, may I add, the usual concerned introspection, full of anxiety and fear, and how am I doing, and am I failing, am I succeeding, all that kind of thing. The fear of failure is oftentimes an issue when one is involved in observation. So the motive prompting observation is not self-interest, but the determination to clarify the aura so that it can register only that which will be illuminating and relate to the divine plan, which will be to the benefit of humanity, therefore to the creation of a new server within the ashrams of the hierarchy. It's an important paragraph, isn't it? So I'll just put that in that illuminating color, yellow. The first, and pick out some parts of it. The use of the word observer, says the Tibetan, involves the concept of duality and therefore of separation. Motive prompting observation is not self-interest, and we should pause and think, how can observation be related to enhancing self-interest? Well, we can try to observe very closely our status, as it were, as a disciple, which can be ambitious and a selfish approach. But here the motive is not self-interest, but the determination to clarify the aura, as a scientist would. Roberto Saggioli says, if you're going to look at yourself the way a scientist would look on at a condition in an objective manner and without emotional identification with what you see. In other words, it's more a mental type of observation. So there is this determination to clarify the aura so that it can register only that which is illuminating and related to the divine plan. Okay, that's one thing. It registers only that. And of course, if we're going to work with our own situation, we're going to realize that much of our observation is not yet at that high standard. And further, our observation will be to the benefit of humanity, and therefore to the creation of a new server, which is you as a mentally inspired soul working through your subtle equipment. Further, the benefit of humanity comes into the picture. Now, just pause for a moment and you ask yourself, when you are observing yourself, are you complaining about what you see? Are you distressed about what you see? Or are you actually in a more scientific soul-mind process of clarifying what you see of your aura so that, so that it will definitely carry light and be related to the divine plan. Well, I wonder if any one of us is able to hold that particular position for very long. But following the Tibetan, I think we can learn to do that. So our observations will at length benefit humanity by creating a new server within the ashrams of the hierarchy. So much depends on our motive, and about that we have to be tremendously honest. What is our motive as we undertake certain acts which are recommended? In this case, the attitude of the observer is strongly recommended. Now, when we hear that, what becomes our attitude with respect to the observations that we are asked to undertake? You can pause for a moment there, you know, as I like to do, as we read along, to see if we can see anything about our true motive. That is, what is the vision, the goal, the objective towards which we are actually working, and not just not idealistically working. We may claim that we are idealistically working, but the true motive may be somewhat different. I had a friend who always accused me at various times in my checkered life of discipleship training of having mixed motives. Well, you know, he did too, and so do so many people. And when I looked at myself, I had difficulty registering that somehow I had mixed motives. It didn't seem so to me. My motives seemed pure and basically involving the spreading of light from the Master to as many others as I could reach. But I cannot discount the fact, possible fact, that he saw within me something that was mixed and was still serving the little self. Also, back in 1987, I gave a presentation aboard the Queen Mary, which, you know, it was a great ship once, and they kind of made it into a museum, kind of a hotel. And the analysis of a fairly fairly advanced disciple was, I was presenting on the PIP, I was presenting on the discovery of the rays, and it got back to me that she said my presentation was self-serving. Well, I was really surprised, once again, because I thought to myself, I'm just trying to make it easier for people to determine what their rays are. But who knows what this other person saw. And then, of course, when people evaluate you, who knows what they are projecting of themselves onto you. Lately, that kind of process of projection is called by a more cumbersome name of self-owning. In other words, you project and it's called a self-own, and you are unaware that you are projecting. You see that in another. Well, maybe I will never know the truth, and I'm sure I've had mixed motives and moments when I have been self-serving, but the idea is really to see it and not get lost in the confusion of other people's psychology. Okay, well, there's that word psychologist. Okay, so DK goes on to say, the divisions made by certain psychologists of the consciousness of man into subconsciousness. Now, I'll insert that that has to do much with the anima mundi, and then within the human being, it has much to do with former experiences which have been forgotten, so that when they surface, literally surface, they seem quite new. Anyway, the division, says the Tibetan, that certain psychologists make when they're facing the consciousness of man, are the divisions of subconscious or subconsciousness, conscious or self-conscious, and superconscious or superconsciousness have a real measure of value here. Now he did bring these very values and divisions up a bit earlier. So so they are divisions of the consciousness of man into subconscious, conscious or self-conscious, and super conscious. Now, this is something that we see that Roberto Assagioli, initiate disciple of Master KH, and on loan, we might say, to the Tibetan, to further the Tibetan's efforts. This is a division which Assagioli exploited, developed, illustrated, and made useful to his readers. Subconscious, conscious or self-conscious, he called that the middle consciousness, and subconsciousness was related to unconsciousness, and the super conscious or consciousness. So they have a real measure of value. And maybe DK will say why it is they do. I mean, after all, we do have different levels of our possible consciousness. And it's well to be aware that that which enters our consciousness can be found in or hailing from various areas within our total capability of consciousness. I mean, we can ask ourselves, where is that coming from? Is this coming from my habitual subconsciousness, or am I aware, really, of what I'm saying and doing because I understand my normal consciousness, what I'm normally aware of, the self-consciousness, or is this coming from a higher point of tension that I rarely access and which can be called the superconscious or the super consciousness? Okay. And I guess you almost have to be in kind of a meditative state to, or very sensitive, to activate this super consciousness. And it's very important that we learn to do so, because this is where the desirable, ever more desirable, ever more inclusive registrations actually come from. Now, you know, as I say that, I'm certainly aware in my own life that I wish they were more and more refined and more inclusive and more frequent than they are. And maybe you have a similar kind of inner request. But maybe we could wake up every day and say, well, today will be a day when when the superconscious realm is really speaking to the consciousness of which I am normally aware. Maybe my super consciousness will be at work and will have those aha experiences which will expand our sense of our subtle and subjective environments. I mean, if you think about Master DK and the kind of environment that he has long been aware of and which he has cultivated through building up the sensitivity of his aura, we can only be grateful for the kind of work that he has done over the years. When we were first born, I suspect that we did not consciously know, because in a way you're born into isolation, that there was a Master DK, or that maybe we had been working with him in the past in some way that caused him to find that it was suitable for him to continue to work with us. We have to be loyal to the teacher. We find that what Master Moria says, if you're an overly ambitious student, well, why not have three teachers? You know, why just be satisfied with one? And the reason there was kind of, well, little harrowing, not too amusing really, when each teacher sends the whirlwind, or, you know, some strong energy, the student cannot stand the multiplicity of those impacting energies and is really debilitated, or under worse circumstances, torn apart. So ambition is not going to lead us to real attainment. So DK goes on. It must be remembered, however, that the disciple, first of all, becomes a truly conscious unit of humanity, and thus, may I suggest, has to or must, and thus develops a true self-consciousness as a member of humanity. Now, I think we can see how important Leo is in this process, because that coming into one's own, coming into oneself, occurring some 3 million years after the initial Sagittarianly assisted individualization, continues to develop the Leo type of self-knowledge, continues to develop under the idea from the Delphic Oracle, know thyself and thou shalt know the world. So that's going to be the development of an ever more acute and expansive and accurate self-consciousness. Now, how does he arrive there, says the Tibetan? This he arrives at by discriminating between the lower self and the higher self, and this renders his magnetic aura to an aspect of himself which has not hitherto been a controlling factor. Okay, well, let me, you know, I try to vary a little bit the colors, not all of them, but at least some. I like to play with colors, and one of my dear friends, who is a computer expert, has advised me how I might increase my color palette, but, you know, I just haven't gotten around to it. Talk about superficiality, okay? I was once in the Masonic Lodge almost 50 years ago, and I met some of the folks there, and who were already members of the lodge. 1974 was my year of entry, and the man handed me a red plastic little disc, and it said on it, TUIT. It was a round to it. And maybe we all have to wonder whether and when we will get around to it. Okay. Now, how does he develop this true self-consciousness? You know, it sounds like such a Leonian process. But here's what DK tells us. True self-consciousness, or of the true self-consciousness, this he arrives at by discriminating between the lower self and the higher. Well, the lower and higher pairs of opposites. The task of that discrimination undertaken when he has, shall I use the word, graduated, when he has graduated from the hall of ignorance. Otherwise, we are just laboring in the hall of ignorance, and we haven't any idea that there are, vertically, a higher and lower pair of opposites. So, he arrives at true self-consciousness by discriminating between the lower self and the higher self. And what's the result? Says DK, this renders his magnetic aura sensitive to an aspect of himself which has not hitherto been a controlling factor. And this is happening in the hall of learning. That's where all this is going on. First of all, arrives at discrimination between the lower and the higher self, and what happens if he does this? This renders his magnetic aura sensitive to an aspect of himself which has not hitherto been the controlling factor. And what would we call that? I think, you know, by now, we know it is called either the superconscious or the super consciousness, and is certainly, for even the average aspirant or disciple, has not been the truly controlling factor. But it is an attainment. It's taking place in the hall of learning. It's taking place amidst the water petals. It's taking of the egoic lotus. It's taking place within the context of petals number 4, 5, and 6, particularly. See, what is really controlling us? Is the lower self controlling us? Or have we made that transition where the higher self is actually controlling us? Now, that we could ponder, we could meditate upon, and probably all of us would have to say we could do more to make sure that it is the higher self which is controlling our personality, and not the personality which is controlling and to an extensive degree shutting off the possibility that the higher self might control. You know, study Libra a little bit, about a point of light which moves to rest, but that point of light is moving in a vertical situation and not in a horizontal situation. There are value-laden ways of dealing with opposites, and they are vertical. And then there are the kind of opposites which are, is cold better than hot, you know? But that's a horizontal kind of evaluation, and on either end of that horizontality, you have extremes, you have opposites, but they are not necessarily what we might call more value-laden or spiritual value-laden or less. Anyway, something new is coming into control, and Scorpio is helping quite a bit to bring that into control through test, trial, and triumph, and through strength, through struggle, strength, and Sagittarian attitudes, and then something new is running the show, and we have the opportunity to have an altogether, or living at an altogether higher point of tension. Now, naturally, you want to ask yourself, at what point of tension am I living? And he says, if our points of tension are scattered all over the personality, we may be extense, but we're not intense. We're not really living at a point of tension. But anyway, maybe just a tiny bit more, because that's all I have time for. From that achieved point where this higher aspect of himself becomes the controlling factor, he begins to register, says the Tibetan, impressions with increasing clarity and accuracy. That is, that's much to be hoped for, isn't it? We're not there yet, perhaps, but we will be there. From the achieved point of being controlled by submitting his magnetic aura to an aspect of himself, the superconsciousness, which has not been a controlling factor, he does advance into being able to register impressions with increasing clarity and accuracy. Usually, I think, you know, I have to be reaching the end here. I'd like to go on, but, that's a big paragraph. That's a big paragraph, and I'm not sure I should undertake it. Basically, usually in the early stages, says the Tibetan, the one desire of the disciple is to register impressions from the hierarchy. He much prefers that idea to the idea of registering impressions from his own soul or from the surrounding human factors, his fellow men, and the environment and circumstances which they create. What I'll do, there's no way that I can keep blitzing here. as much as I would like to. So, you know, there was a man, ISGL, GL, I think, was group love, and maybe S was stability, and I'm not sure, I don't remember exactly what I stood for. But DK started right off and said, look, your orientation has always been more towards us than towards your fellow human beings, toward the soul. You prefer the idea that you are associated with the hierarchy and not the other idea, that your soul is the first master. And indeed, the soul is the first master, being a member of the council within the sun. Now, there's a council chamber, which is planetary for us, but there's also a council within the sun. So this makes of the solar angel and its projection, the angel of the presence, quite an exalted being. So anyway, this individual and individuals like this, of them, DK says he much prefers that idea to the registering of impressions from his own soul. Okay, so here's number one. From his own soul, from the surrounding. Not doing too well here because it's too dark. Or from the from the surrounding human factors, his fellow men, and the environment and circumstances that they create. He'd much rather a chum be a chum of the hierarchy than maybe the more practical, engaged in the more practical a task of, what should we call it, channeling his own soul and receiving from the hierarchy, or from, let's see, excuse me, he'd much rather be the companion of hierarchy than work with his own soul and his fellow human beings, and basically that would mask oftentimes some kind of pride and some kind of ambition to a great extent. Well, we're on page 102, and if I were ISGL, and I don't think I am, but I would pay real close attention, really close attention, to what the Tibetan is here giving, up to page 102. Okay, let's see. So that's 40. And here we go. So this is the end of little program 41. And today is the 5th of December, and we started at page 101, and looks like we've made it all the way to page 102. Well, there's a lot to think about, and here as well, we would begin with program 42 and enter something different. This is the end of 40. I believe, and beginning with program 41 and from 101. And then let's go down here as I'm already in that lethal state of rushing where I'm probably going to make mistakes. I hope not. We're ending with 41, and it goes from 101 to, amazingly, to 102. I guess this is what you call the crawl stage, and we'll take this up, but we don't know exactly when. A double X there, and we'll start with page 102. Yeah, well, that would be a good place. And what I'll do is right there, I'll try to make a I'll try to make a new little program, and not rushing. I'm telling myself things, and let's just see if I can do that. Save as. And browse, and telepathy collection, and basically we've got a let's call it a 41. It won't be very long at all. Okay, and now we'll go back here and we'll go up to 42, and that should be sufficient because it's a big program, and let's see how we'll do that. We'll browse, and my helpers keeping me honest and on track will do something that really is useful. So let's see. I've only got 15 kilobytes there, and let's see here. This is complete, and it's going to be program 41. Okay. And I'll send this off to those that can really use it. And I do so hope I'm in the right place. Okay, maybe I didn't press the share sound. So many little things that one might overlook. Here's program 41, small and large programs. Please do the usual. And so BL and Joe and Harold will load this onto Makara and YouTube, and Michael will send it off as a special sending. So program 41 in large and small versions. Of TEVV is completed up to conversion. Let's hope for the best, and you know, and Joe and Harold. And myself also. This is just text. So here is text, and here is hope. And we'll send this off to those people associated with us who can use it quite immediately. And the rest of everyone will get it in just a little while. Okay. As you can tell, I'm trying to race along here. Not always the best idea, but anyway, it's happening. So, first, that's one. And this is two. Okay. That should be enough to get everybody started. And then, if I'm fortunate, later tonight I will continue. Meanwhile, over to the other computer and wishing you a good assimilation of this material with lots of love from Tuya and myself and the whole communications team. Okay, here goes to you. Okay. And I'll stop the recording now and make sure that this is on its way.